Nemoto presents American presidents. President Barack Obama. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 40 minutes. On the night of November 4, 2008, tens of thousands of people gathered in Chicago's Grant Park, their breath visible in the crisp autumn air, united by a shared moment of history. Barack Obama, son of a Kenyan father and a Kansan mother, walked onto the stage having just been elected the 44th President of the United States. He was the first African American ever to claim the nation's highest office, and as he addressed the roaring crowd, many wept with joy and disbelief. "If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible," he began, inviting a hopeful reflection on how far the country had come. Obama spoke of hope and the enduring power of the American ideal, famously reminding the nation, "Yes, we can." That electrifying victory speech marked not just the culmination of a remarkable campaign, but the dawn of a presidency laden with sky-high expectations and daunting challenges. Barack Hussein Obama II was born on August 4, 1961, in Honolulu, Hawaii. His very name and heritage foreshadowed the diverse path his life would take. His mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, known as Ann, was a white woman from Kansas with a free-spirited intellect, and his father, Barack Obama Sr., was a black man from a small village in Kenya who came to the University of Hawaii on a scholarship. They met in a Russian language class, fell in love, and had Barack, their Barry, as a young couple. But the marriage was short-lived. Barack's father left Hawaii when the boy was two to pursue a PhD at Harvard and then returned to Kenya. Obama's early childhood was thus shaped primarily by his mother and her parents, with only distant memories of a brief visit from his father when Barack was 10. And Obama was a curious, idealistic woman. When Barack was 6, she married an Indonesian man, Lolo Sitoro, and the family moved to Jakarta. For 4 years, from ages 6 to 10, young Barack lived in Indonesia, attending local schools, where he sometimes was noted for being the only foreign black child in class, and absorbing the sights and sounds of a very different world. He's recalled waking to the call to prayer from mosques, walking past open sewers to school, and seeing beggars and farmers in the streets, experiences that broadened his perspective about global inequality at an early age. Concerned about her son's education and safety after a period of political upheaval in Indonesia, and sent Barack back to Hawaii at age 10 to live with his maternal grandparents, Stanley and Madeline Dunham. In Honolulu, he attended Punahou School, a prestigious prep academy, on a scholarship. At Punahou, Obama was one of only a handful of black students. He excelled in basketball and was known for his friendly, low-key demeanor and quick smile. But behind the easygoing facade, he was grappling with questions of identity, feeling at times like he didn't fully belong in either the white world or the black world, struggling to understand his place. He later wrote about this period in his memoir, Dreams from My Father, revealing the inner turmoil and rebellion of his adolescent years, the experiments with marijuana and a little cocaine, the sometimes casual attitude toward schoolwork, all while searching for meaning and belonging. His grandparents and mother, who had returned to Hawaii for a time before doing anthropology fieldwork abroad, provided stability and love, but Barack hungered for a connection to the absent father he barely knew and to the African heritage that felt both distant and intrinsic. After high school, Obama headed to the mainland United States for college. He spent 2 years at Occidental College in Los Angeles, where he began to get more serious about his studies and his political awareness blossomed. He gave a speech urging his college to divest from apartheid South Africa, reflecting a growing social conscience. He transferred to Columbia University in New York City, seeking a larger stage. In 1983, he graduated from Columbia with a degree in political science, specializing in international relations. After graduation, Obama worked for a year in New York at a business-oriented job, but he found little fulfillment in the corporate world. Motivated by a desire to connect with real people and affect change, he moved to Chicago in 1985 to become a community organizer. In Chicago, Obama took a job with a small faith-based group trying to improve living conditions in the city's largely black, impoverished South Side neighborhoods. This work, for a salary of just $12,000 a year, was challenging and often frustrating. He knocked on doors in housing projects, met with church groups, and tried to address problems like joblessness, asbestos in apartments, and the despair of communities hit hard by steel mill closures. At first, he encountered suspicion. Who was this biracial kid with an unusual name and an Ivy League background, coming to tell longtime Chicagoans how to empower their community? But Obama learned to listen more than talk, and he slowly earned trust. Those 3 years as an organizer grounded him. He saw up close the struggles of ordinary people and the limits of what small-scale efforts could achieve against big structural issues. It was humbling but also motivating. Obama realized that to make broader change, he might need to work from within the system and equip himself with more skills. Thus, in 1988, Barack Obama left Chicago for Harvard Law School, one of the nation's top law programs. At Harvard, his intellect and charisma truly shone. He was elected president of the Harvard Law Review, the first black student ever to hold that prestigious position, a newsworthy milestone that earned him an early national profile. He graduated magna cum laude in 1991, having impressed professors and classmates as someone with a rare combination of keen analytical mind and an ability to bridge divides through dialogue. The Law Review presidency in particular foreshadowed his talent for bringing people together. Obama managed to earn the respect of both conservative and liberal law students who were often at odds, by hearing out all viewpoints and finding common ground. After law school, Obama had his pick of opportunities, including Supreme Court clerkships, but he returned to Chicago, rejoining his adopted home city with a sense of mission. He practiced as a civil rights attorney with a small public interest firm and lectured on constitutional law at the University of Chicago. He also plunged into voter registration drives and local politics. Not long after returning to Chicago, another life-changing event happened. He met Michelle Robinson. Michelle was a fellow Harvard Law graduate, a bright and ambitious young lawyer from the South Side of Chicago. They met when Michelle was assigned to mentor Barack, a summer associate at her corporate law firm. Romance bloomed. Michelle's roots in Chicago's black working-class community and her steady, no-nonsense character complemented Barack's worldly, philosophical bent. They married in 1992 and would later have two daughters, Malia, born 1998, and Sasha, born 2001. The Obama's strong partnership and family life became a central part of Barack's public image, an image of a modern, loving African-American family that inspired many. Obama's first step into elective politics came in 1996, when he ran for the Illinois State Senate from the South Side district that included Hyde Park, where he lived. He won and went to Springfield, the state capital, as an idealistic reformer. In the Illinois State Senate, Obama cut his teeth politically. He learned the art of compromise and coalition building, often working with Republicans on issues where their interests aligned. He helped pass legislation on ethics reform after a corruption scandal, worked on a law to require police to record interrogations and confessions in potential death penalty cases, to prevent coerced confessions, and supported expansions of health care for children and early childhood education. State Senator Obama was pragmatic. He earned a reputation as someone who did not hold grudges and who could debate fiercely on the floor one moment and share a friendly joke the next. Those skills earned him respect in Springfield, but state politics was only the beginning. In 2000, Obama made an ill-fated attempt at a bigger leap. He challenged Congressman Bobby Rush, a former Black Panther, in a Democratic primary for a U.S. House seat. Rush soundly defeated Obama, painting him as out of touch with the district and too intellectually oriented. It was a humbling setback for Obama, who returned to the state Senate and redoubled his efforts there. But he didn't give up on higher aspirations. A few years later, opportunity knocked. The incumbent U.S. Senator from Illinois, Republican Peter Fitzgerald, decided not to seek re-election in 2004. Obama saw a chance and entered the race. In a crowded Democratic primary, he was initially considered a long shot next to better-known figures. Yet, Obama's charm, eloquence, and compelling life story started gaining traction. A combination of grassroots organizing, aided by many volunteers inspired by his message, and fortunate events, like the implosion of a major rival's campaign due to scandal, propelled him to win the primary. But it was a single speech that summer that catapulted Barack Obama onto the national stage and previewed the kind of president he would aspire to be. In July 2004, Obama delivered the keynote address at the Democratic National Convention in Boston. He was still a state legislator, but his ability as an orator had become apparent to party leaders, and they gave him this prominent slot. Obama's speech did not disappoint. With a poised, passionate delivery, he spoke of his own story as proof of the American dream, the hope of a skinny kid with a funny name who believes that America has a place for him, too. He spoke of unity. There's not a liberal America and a conservative America. There's the United States of America. He deplored the politics of cynicism and urged the politics of hope. The arena erupted in applause, and millions watching on television saw a future star. Overnight, Obama became one of the most famous politicians in America, even before he'd been elected to national office. In November 2004, riding that momentum, he won the U.S. Senate seat in a landslide, helped again by a disarrayed opposition campaign. In the U.S. Senate, Obama spent 2005 to 2006 carefully navigating his role. A freshman in a body that prized seniority, he kept a low profile at first, focusing on policy work and forging relationships. He worked with Republicans like Senator Dick Lugar on securing loose nuclear materials abroad, and with Senator Tom Coburn on a Google for Government website to track federal spending, showing his inclination toward transparency and bipartisanship. However, the political climate was shifting. Public discontent with the Iraq War and the Bush administration was growing. In 2006, Democrats won back Congress, and thoughts turned to the fast-approaching 2008 presidential contest. Many in the party began urging Obama to run. Though he had limited experience, they saw in him a transformational figure who could inspire and potentially realign the nation's politics. After consulting with his family and close advisors, and despite earlier hints he'd serve a full Senate term, Obama decided to go for it. In February 2007, he announced his candidacy for president in Springfield, Illinois, invoking the legacy of Abraham Lincoln and the idea of One America United and moving forward. The 2008 Democratic primary pitted Obama against the formidable Hillary Clinton, a New York senator and former first lady who was widely seen as the favorite. The battle was historic. The first seriously competitive African-American contender against the first woman with a real shot at the presidency. Initially, Obama trailed Clinton in national polls, with many assuming Clinton's experience and machine would secure her the nomination. But Obama's team ran a masterful campaign, leveraging the enthusiasm of young voters and volunteers, mastering social media and small donor fundraising, and excelling in the on-the-ground organization that won caucus states and delegates. In January 2008, Obama won a surprise victory in the Iowa caucuses, showing that a black candidate could win in a predominantly white state and giving credence to his broad appeal. Although Clinton rebounded in New Hampshire, the die was cast for a long contest. They traded wins across the country, but Obama's consistency in gathering delegates, especially by dominating smaller caucuses, built him a lead. By June 2008, he secured enough delegates to become the presumptive nominee. Clinton conceded and eventually endorsed Obama, urging her supporters to rally behind him in the goal of electing a Democrat after 8 years of George W. Bush. In the general election, Obama faced Senator John McCain, a war hero with a maverick reputation. The contrasts were stark. Obama, a 47-year-old first-term senator known for eloquence and vision. McCain, a 72-year-old veteran lawmaker known for candor and experience. Initially, the race was tight. Some wondered whether America was ready to elect a black president, and Republicans tried to cast Obama as too inexperienced and even question his associations, bringing up Obama's former pastor Jeremiah Wright's controversial sermons, for example. But Obama stayed steady, using his cool temperament to his advantage. He chose Senator Joe Biden as his running mate to add foreign policy heft to the ticket. A major turning point came in the fall when the financial crisis hit full force. The economy was in free fall, and voters overwhelmingly blamed Republican stewardship. McCain's response to the crisis was erratic at first, saying the fundamentals of the economy are strong one day, suspending his campaign the next to focus on the bailout, whereas Obama's was calm and measured, which bolstered his appeal as a steady hand in troubled times. On November 4, 2008, Barack Obama was elected president with 365 electoral votes to McCain's 173, winning states and demographic groups that had long eluded Democrats. A multiracial, multigenerational coalition propelled him to victory, and the sight of jubilation that night, from Chicago to Harlem to Kenya, reflected the profound sense of significance people attached to Obama's election. It was as if America had redeemed some part of its history by electing a black man to the office once built by slaves, signaling for many a new era. When Obama was inaugurated on January 20, 2009, an enormous crowd, estimated at 1.8 million, the largest ever for an inauguration, gathered in Washington, D.C., braving the cold to witness the moment. The country was in the midst of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, and two distant wars were ongoing. In his inaugural address, Obama soberly noted the challenges. "Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred," he said, "and our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices." He also emphatically declared that America had chosen hope over fear, and unity of purpose over conflict and discord, implicitly marking a break from what he saw as the divisive politics of the past. That day, the reins of power passed not just from one party to another, but to a new generation and a barrier-breaking president who carried immense expectations. Obama's first order of business was confronting the economic calamity. The financial system had been stabilized by the outgoing administration's emergency measures, but the economy was hemorrhaging jobs, over 700,000 lost in January 2009 alone. The new president immediately pushed for a massive economic stimulus plan. Working with the Democratic-controlled Congress, Obama got the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act passed in February 2009. The bill, about $787 billion, was a mix of tax cuts, aid to states, and spending on infrastructure, education, and green energy. While Republicans universally in the House and mostly in the Senate opposed it, arguing it was too costly and ideologically expansive, Obama insisted that the government had to jolt the economy back to life and save or create millions of jobs. The stimulus did stem some of the bleeding. By mid-2009, the recession bottomed out, and economic growth slowly resumed. Independent economists later concluded that the stimulus likely averted an even deeper downturn, though its size may have been insufficient for a rapid recovery. Politically, however, the large spending fed into a brewing backlash on the right about deficits and government reach. The Tea Party movement was soon born in opposition to Obama's agenda. Nonetheless, through aggressive actions by the Fed, the continuation of financial rescues, including auto bailouts for GM and Chrysler that Obama oversaw, and the stimulus, a depression was avoided. By late 2009, Wall Street was recovering, banks repaid TARP funds, stock markets regained ground, but unemployment remained painfully high, near 10%. The disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street bred resentment. Meanwhile, Obama tackled another issue on which he had campaigned vigorously: healthcare reform. Expanding health insurance to millions of uninsured Americans had been a dream of progressive reformers for decades. Obama believed the time had come, even though attempting it had famously bedeviled past presidents, Clinton in 1994, most recently. In 2009, Obama let Congress take the lead in crafting the legislation, but he set broad principles and remained deeply involved behind the scenes. The battle was fierce and complex. Town hall meetings that summer saw loud protests, as opponents decried what they feared was a government takeover of health care. Phrases like death panels and misinformation spread, partly stoked by conservative media. Not a single Republican in Congress was willing to back the bill, citing concerns over cost and government mandates. Despite Democrats holding majorities, internal party divisions had to be carefully managed. Some moderate Democrats balked at aspects like the public option, a government-run insurance plan, and the overall price tag. After months of intense debate and deal-making, including reassurances to anti-abortion Democrats about restrictions on federal funding for abortion, the Senate passed its version on Christmas Eve 2009. Then a political scare. In January 2010, Democrats lost a special Senate election in Massachusetts, costing them their filibuster-proof 60th vote. For a moment, it looked like health care reform might die. But the White House and Speaker Nancy Pelosi orchestrated a strategy to have the House approve the Senate bill and then tweak it through a budget reconciliation process, which required only a simple majority in the Senate. Finally, in March 2010, the Affordable Care Act, soon nicknamed Obamacare, became law. It was the most significant overhaul of the U.S. healthcare system since Medicare in the 1960s. The ACA's main provisions included preventing insurance companies from denying coverage due to pre-existing conditions, allowing young adults to stay on their parents' plans until 26, expanding Medicaid in states that agreed to cover more low-income people, and setting up insurance exchanges with subsidies to help middle-income individuals buy private insurance. It also mandated that most Americans obtain health insurance or pay a penalty, a provision meant to ensure a broad risk pool. The victory was a historic triumph for Obama, cementing a key part of his legacy. However, it came at a steep political cost. Republicans who universally opposed it used the ACA as a rallying cry, claiming it was an onerous expansion of government and vowing to repeal it. The backlash contributed to a wipeout for Democrats in the 2010 midterms, where they lost control of the House. And implementation of the law in coming years would prove challenging, with a rocky rollout of the federal insurance website and continued partisan battles in states over Medicaid expansion. Still, millions would eventually gain coverage under Obamacare, and it would survive multiple repeal attempts, suggesting that Obama's gamble paid off in reshaping the social contract in America. Foreign policy was another arena where President Obama made a mark in his first term, though often with a pragmatism that sometimes disappointed those who expected sweeping change. Early on, he delivered a major speech in Cairo, June 2009, aimed at resetting relations with the Muslim world, strained by the Iraq War and War on Terror. He spoke about mutual respect and the need to move beyond prejudices and past grievances. The address was well received by many abroad, showcasing Obama's international appeal and oratorical skills. He also reached out a hand to adversaries, famously saying he'd talk to leaders of countries like Iran and Cuba, a stance that had been criticized by rivals in the campaign. Diplomacy under Obama emphasized engagement. With Iran, his administration quietly began backchannel talks over its nuclear program. With Russia, he pursued a reset, achieving a New START treaty in 2010 to further reduce nuclear arsenals. These efforts were part of Obama's vision of moving away from unilateral swagger to collaborative global leadership. The world even awarded him the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009, citing his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy, an honor that came very early in his tenure and even Obama admitted he didn't yet deserve, considering it a call to action. Wars that Obama inherited dominated much of his focus too. In Iraq, as promised, Obama oversaw the drawdown of U.S. forces. Combat operations officially ended in August 2010, and the last American combat brigade rolled out. By December 2011, the remaining troops were withdrawn, in line with an agreement Bush had made with the Iraqi government. Obama touted the end of the Iraq War, though the country remained unstable and violence continued at lower levels. In Afghanistan, conversely, Obama had campaigned on the idea that it was the good war that had been neglected. After a policy review, he authorized a surge of 30,000 additional troops in 2009 to try to turn the tide against a resurgent Taliban, but set a timeline to begin bringing troops home in 18 months. The war in Afghanistan dragged on, however, and became known grimly as the Forever War. Still, Obama aimed to wind that down as well and began drawing down forces after the surge's effects were deemed only modestly successful. One foreign policy achievement that defined Obama's presidency came on May 2, 2011. Acting on years of intelligence work that finally pinpointed Osama bin Laden's likely location, a compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, Obama gave the go-ahead for a risky special operations raid. SEAL Team 6 flew in by helicopter, stormed the hideout, engaged in a brief firefight and killed bin Laden, the mastermind of 9/11, with a precise gunshot. When Obama announced the successful operation on television that night, Americans erupted in spontaneous celebration in places like Times Square and outside the White House. Nearly a decade after the attacks, the face of global terrorism had been brought to justice on Obama's watch. It was an undeniable triumph and boosted Obama's standing across the board, even winning praise from some usual critics. It didn't end the threat of terrorism, but it provided a sense of closure and vindication. Despite high hopes at the start, Obama's presidency could not magically heal the country's divides. In fact, the combination of the economic stress, the cultural changes symbolized by Obama himself, and a polarized media environment arguably made politics more acrimonious. The Tea Party movement rose in 2009 with angry town halls and rallies opposing not just Obama's policies, stimulus, health care, cap-and-trade environmental proposals, but often Obama personally. Conspiracy theories like the birther lie, claiming Obama wasn't born in the U.S., festered on the fringes, egged on by the likes of businessman Donald Trump, who became a chief promoter of that falsehood. Though dismissed by the mainstream, these undercurrents signal the hardening of partisan and cultural trenches. Obama, who campaigned as a unifier, found Republicans in Congress largely unwilling to work with him after the initial flurry of bipartisan cooperation, like on the 2008 crisis and a children's health insurance bill. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell famously said in 2010 that the single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term president. Compromise became scarce. For example, when a moderate Supreme Court Justice, John Paul Stevens, retired in 2010, Obama nominated Elena Kagan, a relatively moderate figure herself. She was confirmed, but with only 5 Republican votes, a sign of the new normal where even qualified nominees faced stiff opposition for being associated with the other party. After the bruising 2010 midterms, Obama recalibrated. He adopted a more conciliatory tone and worked with the GOP on some areas. A deal to extend Bush-era tax cuts for a couple years, in exchange for extended unemployment benefits and a payroll tax cut to stimulate the economy, in late 2010, and a reform of public school accountability called Race to the Top that dangled grant money to encourage educational improvements. But full-fledged sweeping initiatives were off the table with Republicans holding the House. Instead, Obama used executive powers where he could. Notably, in 2012, he created DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, by executive action, providing temporary relief from deportation for young undocumented immigrants, Dreamers, brought to the U.S. as children, a move celebrated by immigration advocates though lamented as insufficient and blasted by the right as an overreach. In 2012, Obama ran for re-election under the slogan Forward. The economic picture, while improved from the depths of 2008 to 2009, was still mixed. Unemployment was falling but remained around 8%. Many felt the recovery was sluggish. The memory of bin Laden's takedown and the exit from Iraq burnished Obama's foreign policy credentials, but Republicans argued the world was more dangerous, pointing to issues like Iran's nuclear program and the deadly 2012 attack on U.S. diplomats in Benghazi, Libya, which they tried to turn into a major scandal for the administration. The Republican nominee, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, ran as an experienced businessman who could accelerate growth and who painted Obama as well-meaning but ineffective and too liberal. The campaign saw sharp exchanges on health care. Ironically, Romney had passed a similar health plan in Massachusetts, taxes, and the role of government. A secretly recorded tape of Romney saying 47% of Americans were dependent on government and wouldn't vote for him hurt his image. Obama also faced a lackluster performance in the first presidential debate that briefly tightened the polls, but he bounced back in subsequent debates, and his team's superior ground operation mobilized key voters. On election night, Obama won again, though by a smaller margin than in 2008, 332 electoral votes and a popular vote margin of about 4%. He carried most swing states, showing that his diverse coalition endured. Freed from the worry of re-election, Obama's second-term agenda was in some ways bolder in rhetoric, especially on issues like climate change and gun control, but he found the political reality still limiting. In December 2012, tragedy struck when a gunman massacred 20 first graders and 6 educators at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. A heartbroken Obama, who cried on camera when speaking about the incident, made gun violence prevention a top priority. He proposed expanded background checks and a renewal of the ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Despite emotional pleas and some Republican support, Senators Manchin and Toomey crafted a bipartisan background checks bill. The legislation was blocked in the Senate by a filibuster threat, and the House never took it up. Obama, standing with parents of the slain children, expressed disgust at Congress's failure. This was a clear example of how even overwhelming public sentiment, majorities favored the measures, couldn't overcome the partisan and interest group, NRA, stranglehold. In June 2013, Obama faced another unexpected challenge, controversy over surveillance practices. Edward Snowden, a former NSA contractor, leaked troves of documents revealing vast U.S. intelligence monitoring programs, including of Americans' phone metadata. These revelations sparked a global debate about privacy and security and tarnished the Obama administration's pledges of transparency and civil liberties, particularly ironic given Obama's own past criticism of Bush's security overreach. Obama defended the programs as essential but ultimately agreed to some reforms of the NSA to assuage public concerns. The second term also saw Obama pivot to climate change as a legacy issue. After cap-and-trade legislation died in his first term, Obama used regulatory authority. In 2015, his EPA finalized the Clean Power Plan, setting limits on carbon emissions from power plants, a move aimed at pushing the energy sector towards renewable sources. Internationally, this helped Obama negotiate the Paris Climate Agreement in December 2015, where nearly 200 countries, including major emitters like China, committed to national plans to reduce greenhouse gases. It was not a binding treaty with strict enforcement, but a landmark diplomatic achievement in global climate cooperation. Obama viewed it as a major foreign policy win, aligning with his view that the U.S. should lead on global commons issues. Another significant stride in diplomacy under Obama was the Iran nuclear deal. For 2 years, U.S. diplomats, along with partners from Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China, negotiated with Iran to curb its nuclear program. In July 2015, they reached the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. Iran agreed to drastically limit and allow inspections of its nuclear facilities, ensuring it could not quickly build a bomb, in exchange for relief from crippling economic sanctions. Obama hailed the deal as preventing a war and cutting off Iran's pathways to a nuclear weapon. Critics, especially Republicans and Israel's Netanyahu, lambasted it as a giveaway that left Iran's nuclear capabilities intact in the long run and empowered a hostile regime with sanctioned money. The deal was never popular with the Republican base, but it stood as a key example of Obama's preference for negotiated solutions over military confrontation. In 2014 to 2016, the world also saw chaos that tested Obama's philosophy of restraint. The rise of ISIS, born from the remnants of al-Qaeda in Iraq and fueled by the Syrian civil war, led to gruesome atrocities and threatened genocide against minorities. When ISIS beheaded American hostages, Obama ordered airstrikes and formed a coalition to combat the group in Iraq and Syria. Though wary of another ground war, he deployed special forces and thousands of advisors to assist local forces. Over time, ISIS's territory shrank, but the conflict was a reminder that the Middle East turmoil had not ended with the Iraq War's close. Back home, social change was accelerating. By Obama's second term, the country was rapidly evolving on the issue of same-sex marriage. Obama himself had been officially evolving on the topic, and by 2012 he publicly endorsed marriage equality. In June 2015, the Supreme Court ruled in Obergefell v. Hodges that same-sex marriage was a constitutional right nationwide. Obama celebrated the decision, lighting the White House in rainbow colors that night, a powerful image that symbolized how far the nation had come on LGBTQ+ rights. It was not Obama's doing alone. Public opinion and the courts led, but as the first sitting president to back gay marriage, he was part of that change and embraced it. Racial issues, however, remained a thorny challenge that often erupted during Obama's presidency. Despite the hopes that his election might usher in a post-racial America, deep-seated racial injustices and tensions persisted. Starting in 2014, a series of police killings of unarmed Black Americans, Michael Brown in Ferguson, Eric Garner in New York, Tamir Rice in Cleveland, among others, ignited protests and gave rise to the Black Lives Matter movement. Obama walked a tightrope. He acknowledged systemic racism in policing and pushed for reforms, like encouraging the use of body cameras and better training, but he also sought to bridge understanding by meeting with police officials and emphasizing law and order. To some activists, he didn't go far enough. To some law and order advocates, he was too critical of police. It was a delicate balance. Obama's own identity made him uniquely situated to speak on these issues, yet it also made him a lightning rod for some criticisms. When he remarked on the killing of Trayvon Martin in 2012 that, "If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon," he humanized the tragedy but also drew ire from those who claimed he was injecting race into it. The nation's racial wounds were far from healed. In some respects, Obama's presidency made the conversation unavoidable, even if it could not resolve it. In June 2015, an act of brutal racial hatred underscored these ongoing divides. A white supremacist gunman murdered 9 black parishioners during a Bible study at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Obama eulogized the victims, delivering one of the most memorable speeches of his presidency, in which he spoke about the legacy of racism and at one point led the congregation in singing Amazing Grace. That scene of the first black president singing a hymn in honor of black Americans slain in a church brought many to tears and showcased Obama's unique capacity for empathy and oratory in moments of pain. As Obama's presidency neared its end, he faced a new political reality: the rise of Donald Trump's populist campaign, which openly challenged Obama's legacy and stoked some of the very forces, nativism, racial resentment, that Obama had tried to calm. It was a strange coda. Obama's approval ratings actually rose in his final year. He left office around 60% approval, quite high, and he actively campaigned for Hillary Clinton to succeed him, framing the election as a defense of his accomplishments and of inclusive American values. But in November 2016, in a shocking upset, Trump won. Obama publicly handled the transition with grace, welcoming Trump to the White House, emphasizing America's democratic continuity, but privately he and many supporters were dismayed, seeing Trump's victory as a repudiation of much of Obama's work. On January 20, 2017, Barack Obama left office after 8 years that had changed the country in lasting ways. He had assumed office in a moment of crisis and left with the economy in much better shape. Unemployment down to 4.7%, 75 consecutive months of job growth, a stock market at record highs, though economic anxiety lingered and inequality remained high. About 20 million more Americans had health insurance than when he began, due to the Affordable Care Act, although health care fights persisted. Internationally, he had wound down 2 wars and avoided new major ones, killed bin Laden and forged significant agreements on climate and Iran, yet the Middle East remained turbulent and adversaries like Russia had grown more emboldened. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 and interfered in the 2016 election via hacking and disinformation, challenging Obama's response. He had led the nation with dignity, grace, and scandal-free governance. No major administration scandals ever marred his tenure, and had been a role model to many. But he also left with his party weakened. Massive Democratic losses in Congress and state legislatures during the Obama years were partly a reaction to him and his policies, and with the sharp polarization of American politics unabated, in fact, arguably worsened. Public perception of Obama when he left office was largely positive. Many Americans said they would miss him and the first family, who had carried themselves with charm and warmth. Michelle Obama had become a beloved figure in her own right, championing issues like healthy nutrition and veterans' families. Barack Obama's cool, professorial demeanor, which sometimes drew criticism as aloof, had kept the presidency remarkably free of drama by contemporary standards. To supporters, he restored honor and intelligence to the office, expanded rights, and navigated incredibly difficult circumstances with steadiness and heart. To critics, he overreached with government, was too hesitant on the world stage, for example, not enforcing his own red line after Syria's Assad used chemical weapons, and presided over a country that felt more divided than ever. History's judgment of Barack Obama is still forming, but as the first African American president, his legacy has an undeniable historic weight. He broke a barrier that once seemed insurmountable. In doing so, he inspired millions of people, of all backgrounds, showing that the highest office truly was open to all talents. He also demonstrated a model of leadership that prized deliberation over impulse, compassion over exclusion, and long-term progress over short-term politics. Many of his achievements, from healthcare reform to climate action, faced immediate assault by his successor, highlighting how fragile progress can be. Yet, many endured or were later revived, suggesting Obama's impact will echo through time. In his farewell address, Obama reminded Americans that our democracy is a work in progress and that each generation must cherish and renew it. It was a fitting capstone for a presidency built on the audacity of hope. Barack Obama's narrative, from a multicultural childhood to community organizer to the White House, remains a singular and remarkable American story, one that continues to influence and illuminate the path ahead for the nation.